following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome, everyone, to the Packers News JS Online Green 19 podcast. Alongside Tom Silverstein, I am Olivia Reiner. Oh, yeah, and we got Ryan Wood on the show today, everybody. Welcome, Ryan.
What's going on, everyone?
You're not an afterthought. I just get so in the groove when I'm doing the intro. I've got to remember to bring on our other guests as well. We're so happy.
We're all creatures of habit. We're all creatures of habit.
Yes, yes. We've got lots to discuss today, everybody. Packers had their opener in the preseason against the Houston Texans. The Packers fell. Texans won 26-7. However, preseason, you might as well just throw the score out the window. It doesn't really matter for the most part. What does matter are some of the individual performances, especially for the less experienced players on the Packers roster as they are vying for 53-man roster spots, practice squad spots. And I think it only makes sense to open our discussion with a certain second-year quarterback, Jordan Love, and discussing his performance. So let's dive right in with that. He only got to play the first half of last night's game, and that's because he had a bit of an injury mishap when he was strip-sacked toward the end of the second half, or excuse me, the second quarter. And that was it. He was supposed to play three quarters, according to head coach Matt LaFleur. That was the plan. Benkert, the last quarter of the game, and that just didn't end up happening. We got to see a little bit extra Kurt Benkert in the second half as a result. Overall, Jordan Love, 17 attempts, 12 completions, 122 passing yards, the sack, and a touchdown, a completion to Kylan Hill. All in all, impressions, gentlemen, of Jordan Love's NFL debut.
Well, it is a little bit appropriate that he got hurt. Just one of those preseason things, you know? It's like you try to find a definitive answer on someone and an injury strike. Just one of those Murphy's Law things. But I don't have a lot to say about it. I thought it was a solid performance, and probably what I thought stood out the most was just the poise with which he played. I don't think he played great, but I thought he looked like a guy who wasn't scared. He didn't play scared. And a lot of times that's what you see.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm most curious what Tom thought about the performance, because Tom, you've seen a lot of ball in your day. You know, I was so prepared to, you know, calm the masses after a miserable debut. That's what I was kind of expecting. Like, you look at what Aaron Rodgers did in his first preseason game back in 2005 against the then San Diego Chargers. It was like 2 for 6 for 7 yards and a 42 passer rating. And a week later against Buffalo, his passer rating was like 12. So my expectations were really on the floor for Jordan Love, just because that seems to be the way it usually goes. So I kind of look at everything through the prism of what your expectations are going in, and it was a lot better than I expected. I, you know, 12 of 17 for a 122 and 110.4 rating. Yeah, he had the touchdown on the screen, but you know, I thought that throw to Jay Sternberger for 34 yards. I mean, it's a layup of a throw. It's a throw any professional quarterback has to make. But for a young guy in his first preseason game who hasn't played in 600 days and has got to be having some nerves, it's also the kind of throw where if you got butterflies, you got nerves, you might miss that throw. And so, like Tom said, his poise. You know, I think that talk with the coaches, you know, after. That's kind of what they've said. Like they thought he handled the team really, really well. And they thought, you know, Luke Gutsy said today that his can game was good, and he thought he was good at the line of scrimmage. And that's kind of what you're looking for from a guy at that position.
So after the game, head coach Matt LaFleur speaks with the media. And one of the phrases that he used a couple times as it related to Jordan Love and his debut performance was the need for him to let that sucker rip a little bit more often. I would imagine something like that, feeling that comfortable at this level. As someone that hasn't played football in almost 2 years, that'll come with more time, more experience. And that's not a luxury that Jordan Love has. And we don't know if he's going to have it this upcoming weekend against the New York Jets, seeing as Matt LaFleur said today that the shoulder injury could keep him out for a couple days, could keep him out of this weekend's game. So that being said, what does Love need to do to let it rip a little bit more often?
Well, I personally don't think it's a horrible thing that he didn't let it rip. You know, Kurt Benkert let it rip, and it looked great for the first, you know, couple of series or keep throws. You know, he completed some passes, and then he was like dangerous with the ball. You know, he got picked off, and I think Jordan Love, the mantra around the Packers and around Aaron Rodgers is don't throw interceptions. Don't put the ball where it can be intercepted. And I think that's where the don't let it rip or he didn't let it rip stems from. I think he'll get more confident that he can let it rip. But the thing I thought was notable was that he tried to stay in the pocket and throw. He did not. Typically you see with young guys, when it breaks down, they're just take off running and everybody gets excited because they scrambled for 12 yards and got a first down and they moved the ball. But I thought he really tried to stay in, go through his progressions and hit his guys. It wasn't pretty, but I think that was like a win for LaFleur in that he's a passer and he's a passer first. And that's what he showed.
It should be said too that Matt LaFleur kind of walked that statement back today as well. You know, he said that upon watching the film, the one throw where he really Saturday night wanted to let it rip was the 15 yarder on the inbreaker to Devin Funchess. And he said upon watching the film, Devin Funchess kind of took a tight break on his route. Might have lost a step there, and he could see how Jordan Love was maybe thrown off a little bit by a step because of the route. And that's timing with your receiver. That's, you know, that's stuff that gets ironed out in the preseason, which preseason's for. But he did kind of walk that statement back a little bit. And I got to say, just watching it live, I didn't think that he was necessarily holding back. You know, I don't have the same eyes as you know, a scout, but I watching it, it wasn't like, wasn't like he was lollipopping it up there. I thought he was stepping into his throws, hanging in the pocket, and you know, he's putting the ball where it needed to be. So
I think sometimes he throws with touch a little too much. I think he's got an arm, and sometimes he needs to use it. And you see it in practice a lot where he kind of just flips it up there and it winds up being a little bit short or just hanging up. And I think that's part of the process he's going through, probably with footwork, with his mechanics, you know, tying up his arm with his feet and all that kind of stuff that they like to talk about. At some point, he's got to drive the ball. And he did that a few times, you're right. And he looks really good when he does drive the ball. But then there's the other times where he just flips it up and you know, it just doesn't look good.
I definitely agree. He's done that in practice. He's lollipopped it at times, and I think he's done it a lot less than he did a year ago. I mean, he didn't let it rip at all in last training camp. I mean, everything was soft, and I think you've actually seen it even in practice. I don't know. I thought there was less of that maybe, but you know, he in the game, but he. Yeah, when he lets it go, he does got a cannon.
So hopefully the Packers certainly hope that Love will be healthy enough to play this upcoming weekend against the Jets and then on the road against the Bills the following weekend. How do the expectations for Love in these preseason games evolve as we continue on and he gets a little bit more experience, gets more comfortable in live action?
But before we talk about that, you mentioned he might be out. They're going to have to sign a quarterback to get them through at least this week. And I'm really dying to know who Aaron Rodgers signs. It's going to be really interesting. I mean, Nagata, isn't Matt Flynn available? He's got to be there. I mean, who else?
Well, Clay Matthews doesn't play quarterback, so that's unfortunate for him.
Could certainly help his case if he did.
They could trade for Tim Boyle, I guess. You know, Rodgers could come up with a deal, I think.
Oh, Tom.
So, I don't know, but that's a question mark. You know, who do they bring in? More than likely just a camp guy.
That's the question, right? They just cut two quarterbacks in what's his face? Jake Dolagala and Blake Bortles, right? They were just in-house recently for OTAs.
Right.
Does it make the most sense to reach back out to one of them and to have them potentially come and fill the void if Love is not healthy enough to play this weekend? Or do they need, you know, they've seen them, they don't need to see them again, they want to find somebody else? What makes the most sense?
Well, Bortles isn't going to come in for 3 days and then get cut. You know, you can get what, $6,000 or $2,000 or whatever they get paid for training camp. I don't think he's going to do that. So they got to find somebody else. Dolgala, to me, seems like the logical guy, but, you know, for all we know, he can't play, and they came to that conclusion. So I don't really know.
I also don't know, and we'll find out, but it'll be somebody. And Brian Gutekunst just said that, I mean, very well right now, they could be having that discussion. He could be having that discussion with Matt LaFleur about what the plan is at quarterback for the week and what they're going to do to try to address the void, if there is going to be a void with Jordan Love recovering from this shoulder injury. So I'll revert back to my original question, which is just about the expectation for Love. How does that expectation evolve as we continue through preseason, if he's healthy enough to finish out the preseason?
Well, I think the big question is how much he's going to miss. I mean, I asked Matt LaFleur point blank today if he could miss the Jets game. And if he misses the Jets, he said potentially yes. If he misses the Jets game, this is his window. This is you're already down to three preseason games, and a lot of years preseason is preseason, whatever, but this is really important time for Jordan Love. And so you're already down to three, and then you're down to two. It's a big, and I you know, they got to protect that throwing shoulder. That's obvious, that comes first, but man, just like Brian Gutekunst said, it's a big bummer if he can't go this weekend. And It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that, ideally you crescendo him through the preseason, you're able to build off what he did and fix the mistakes, like the brain fart, as Matt LaFleur put it, when he opened up the wrong way on fourth down and couldn't hand it off and had to chuck it up in double coverage. You know, those type of things are things that you can correct and build on the next week. It's not great. It's not ideal if he can't go this weekend.
Any other Love thoughts before we move on to some of the other topics to cover out of last night's preseason game?
Not really. I think we covered most of it. And I think one of the things that he left with was at least positive reaction from the fan base, who is going to be very critical of him. They're going to be judging, you know, Brian Gutekunst's pick. And, you know, if the guy comes in, you know, just like Ryan pointed out with Rodgers, when he really stunk early on, all the talk was about what a wasted pick he was. And so, you know, Jordan Love got off on the right foot with the faithful.
Yeah, they kind of sidestepped that, didn't they? You know, it's funny, that first third down that he threw, where he threw into, it was to Amari Rodgers, and he threw into double coverage, and the ball just should, that's not a ball he should have ever thrown, you know, from a decision standpoint. He was lucky he wasn't picked. It was fun. I mentioned that because, I mean, it's obvious, right? And I got a tweet back about, he put it right on the money. He put it right. It's, you know, you get a sense from fans that, like they want to like this pick sometimes. Like they want, obviously, because it's good for the Packers, they want Jordan Love to work out. They want to like it. And they need a little bit of belief, a little bit of reason to feel that way. And I think that if nothing else, and again, like I said, I was all ready to, but hey, he was miserable in his debut, but that's okay. It's only one game. It's kind of the opposite, right? He was good in his debut, but it's only one game. He's got to do it again. But I think if nothing else, it kind of gave that little reason to have some belief in, oh, this guy's pretty talented and he can play the position and let's see him grow.
It's tough to ask human beings just to be patient in general, in all aspects of life. And Packers fans have had a lot of patience when it comes to Jordan Love. And they haven't needed to see him right away because of a certain Aaron Rodgers, but this offseason has provided a glimpse into the future of what life could potentially be like without the quarterback. And Jordan Love is the heir apparent, and they want to know what they have in the heir apparent. So I understand the anxiousness perhaps surrounding him. And we got a little bit of a glimpse of Love finally for the first time last night. So it's exciting. It's nerve-wracking, I'm sure, if you're a Packers fan too, but there's a lot more to come. So we'll continue to have the discussions about him and his development as we get to see him more and more in game action. So Tom, you mentioned the need to protect Jordan Love and that shoulder. Let's talk about not only the coaches that need to protect him, but the actual athletes standing in front of Jordan Love that need to protect him too. So the Packers offensive line saw a lot of different combinations last night. Probably the first two combinations are probably the most notable. We saw different combos at left guard. We saw John Runyon Jr. taking snaps there with the first group. And then later on, Ben Braden came in and John Runyon moved to center. And the offensive line, I mean, overall, I think there were certainly some issues, especially when it came to run blocking. The Packers run game wasn't really able to get going as a result of that. But just overall, what do the Packers need to continue to sort out along the offensive line before putting together a definitive week one starting group?
Well, it was a surprise, somewhat of a surprise to me that, you know, the five they put out there was not a bad group. We've seen it in training camp, and they have to block, you know, guys who are desperate to win jobs, and they sometimes have to block, you know, first teamers, and they just looked overwhelmed. Like Houston was playing at a little different speed than they were. And, you know, your tackles are so critical in preseason games because you don't have the reliability of throwing David Bakhtiari, and usually it's Brian Bulaga, and in this case, Billy Turner. And, you know, just knowing that your quarterback's going to be okay in the edge. So I was mildly taken aback about how poorly they played. And I think sometimes the pass protection was okay, and it was enough for Jordan Love and for Benkert, but I agree with the coaches that the run game was just kind of a mess. And, you know, I asked Nathaniel Hackett about that, and he didn't really answer it. And I still wonder about this, but they've been so caught up in getting Jordan Love ready that I just wonder if they kind of neglected the run game the first couple of weeks, and that they'll start to put in a few more run plays in some of their periods.
First of all, Spoon, that was a great question you asked. I didn't even think about it until that voice of God in the room, because you were on Zoom today, came in. I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense. I hadn't thought of that, but I mean, it's logical, right? You know, but Adam Stinovich was more than a little taken back to put it clearly. He said the running game was very bad, lacked intensity, and that he is going to likely fire. So Adam Stinovich was not pleased. And How about Adam Stinovich also just point blank saying that nobody is differentiated themselves at that guard spot at either spot, and that it could be a different tandem next time. We've only seen Lucas Patrick at right guard in camp. Like he's been exclusively taken. I mean, he's been the starting right guard, but he said that it could be a different tandem. They could switch it up against the Jets. Both those spots are open. So, you know, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go.
And who's to say they don't move Billy Turner back to guard if Dennis Kelly can show he can play right tackle? I mean, again, it is playing your best five. And I still think Billy Turner's best position is right tackle. But if Dennis Kelly can be a decent run pass blocker out there, Billy Turner's a good interior run blocker. And you put him next to Myers, and then – if you can get Elton Jenkins back at guard, then they got a running game. But, you know, for a team whose mantra is that everything comes off the running game, I just never got the feel that their running game has been a big priority during training camp. Mm-hmm.
You know, when Stenovich said that, the fact that no one has really stepped up to claim the guard, either guard position, and to stake their claim as the rightful first string guy, you know, it's only the first preseason game, right? But we're well into training camp. How concerning is it to hear those words that nobody has stepped up to really show that, hey, this is my position?
Well, I thought it was pretty stunning because Lucas Patrick was your starting right. I know that he didn't go into last season as your preferred starting right guard. It was only when Lane Taylor tore his ACL week one at Minnesota that he took that job, and then he never let it go. And he's been effectively your incumbent starting right guard. So I thought it was a pretty jarring statement.
I do. I think so as well. I think there's motivation behind that statement though, too. I think he badly needs one of them to show over the other to make his job a little easier. And also, I don't think it's the end of the world. I've seen offensive lines play terrible in the first game, and then the coaches get all over them and they work on it stuff during the week, and they get a chance, like this time they'll get a chance to work against the Jets. And then they start to get, you know, their groove back a little bit. The other thing to remember is that there was only one starter on the offensive line. And so, you know, in three weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it is, we won't even remember that there was Ben Braden and Runyon and, you know, some of these guys and Yash Neiman and stuff like that. We won't even be thinking about them.
Yeah, and Elton Jenkins and Billy Turner aren't going to be playing in the preseason, as Matt LaFleur said today. So this is the offensive line you're going to see for a while, and it's not really their offensive line. Kind of like the defense full of bottom-of-the-roster guys last night. Same. I mean, some of these guys might not even make the team. So,
yeah,
it's not your ideal five.
The one thing I will say is that it would really help them if Yash Neiman could be a backup left tackle, because they don't need to keep moving Elton Jenkins over to left guard or left tackle. I mean, they need him to stay in the interior where he can dominate. And they can't do that. They have to keep moving him around, and you'd rather play him at his preferred position if you could. But so that's a key position. And, you know, we don't know if David Bakhtiari is going to be there the first month of the season right now.
Right. And Neiman has been on the roster now for 2 years, almost. It's been quite, he's been in the Packers system for a little while, although he hasn't played many significant actual game snaps. I think he had like 16 snaps last season, and who knows, it might've all been in victory formation, but regardless,
no, he was on the 53 man roster the whole year.
Right. Right. So they have put this investment in him. When are they expecting a return on their investment, and how much patience should they have?
Now and none.
Okay.
That would be my answer.
I was going with the exact same word. You just took it right out of my mouth. Yes, now. It is absolutely right now.
Yeah. All right, so some big preseason games upcoming for Yosh Nijman. And we touched on the run game, difficult run game for the offensive line. So in turn, how do you even assess? I mean, we got to see just about every running back under the sun that's not named Aaron Jones on the field last night. Dexter Williams, Patrick Taylor, AJ Dillon, Kylan Hill. And as a group, 21 carries for 49 yards. And Dexter Williams is your leading rusher, 4 attempts for 32 yards. How do you even begin to make an assessment of that group when the run blocking was not there?
Well, that's the thing. It wasn't there. You know, Kylan Hill carried over from what he'd been doing in camp and obviously had the lone touchdown on the night. And if you listen to the coaches, Maurice Drayton about a week ago put it right there on the wall when he said that Kylan Hill's the kickoff returner. Kylan Hill's the third running back. I asked Ben Sermons that point blank today, and he said he wouldn't go as far to say that, yes, Kylan Hill is the third running back, but he said that he is in a great position to have that job. So Kylan Hill's, barring injury or barring a shocking collapse in these last two preseason games, he's going to be their third running back behind Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. And, you know, you saw why on that screen pass. I mean, he's got good burst, good vision, set up his blocks well. It was an impressive play by a rookie in his first preseason game. Dexter Williams ran hard. It does seem like the game has slowed down for Dexter Williams compared to where he was a couple years ago, for sure. And when he was in there, he was making things happen. I think his most impressive run was probably the last on the 8-yard carry where he was pushing the pile for the first down. But it was also, Matt LaFleur said, you know, it was blocked a lot better up front for Dexter Williams than it was earlier in the night as well. So, you know, he definitely had that benefit.
Well, the shame about it for Dexter Williams is that if I was a betting man, I would say he's going to come through and have a better production than either of those other two backs running the ball during the preseason. But they're going to pick Kylan Hill because of his potential, because he's a home run hitter. He's got a chance to be a real dangerous outlet, both in the passing game, as we saw with the screen. But, you know, Dexter Williams, I think, is a more refined runner than either one of those other two guys. But, you know, the clock's just ticking for a guy like him, and they're always going to go with potential over, you know, at least in the number three spot, they're going to go with potential over a guy who produces.
They're going to want him to be on the practice squad, right? Dexter Williams. That's,
you would think so. I mean, he's the kind of guy you would want if there's a rash of injuries, because you could at least, you know, function and do everything. I mean, Kylan Hill probably can, but, you know, there's going to be mistakes, and his pass protection is always going to be a question mark. So, yeah, we'll see.
Let's touch on, before we flip it over to the defense, let's touch on tight ends quickly. And by tight ends, I mean Jay Sternberger, because that was we got to see a little bit of Isaac Nauta in the first half. I think I saw him go into the blue medical tent at some point during the second quarter or so, and he never returned to the game. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But regardless, let's discuss Sternberger. He had the big play of the night, as we've already discussed, his 35-yard reception down the right seam. And for Sternberger entering year three, hasn't been able to really solidify a role on this team. What does he need to do? I mean, how much is his back up against the wall this upcoming season to finally stake a role?
Well, the 2-game suspension mm-hmm. that he's facing
yep.
really puts him behind. And he's not going to steal time from Robert Tonyan. He's really got to fight for time with Dominic Daphne, assuming he makes the squad. And I think he did the right thing in putting on some weight during the off season. He doesn't look like he's a glorified wide receiver anymore, you know, playing tight end. He's just got to be, I thought Justin Elton was really blunt and just got to be consistent. He's got to get his act together and be the player that they thought they were getting in the third round.
Yeah, I asked Justin Elton point blank what he thought of his camp. It's just a very simple, generic, kind of like a get me over fastball, right? Just that very easy question. And he took that and he smacked the thing over the wall. He said the word he used to describe Jay Sternberger was sporadic. He said that one play does not encapsulate the entire training camp. He said that Jay Sternberger needs to get more comfortable in the playbook and around the line of scrimmage. It was about as strong of an answer as you could hear, as candid of an answer as you could hear a position coach say. I thought he's been having his best camp. I'm not saying that he's been out there and he's been a world beater every day, but he's shown up in competitive drills and he's, you know, he's had some moments. I'm curious what you think, Tom. My guess is he'll make the 53 after that's getting off the suspended list, but I don't know that I'd be shocked if he didn't.
Yeah, I think he will. I think they have a lot invested there. And he's also one of those guys who, you know, maybe halfway through the season, someone gets hurt, and then all of a sudden he's forced to play, and, you know, just the light goes on. And he plays well, or, you know, he plays himself out of a job. You know, he comes in, he's just terrible, and then they give up on him. But there's something there, and they got to find it, and he's got to mature. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, he's got to mature and decide that he wants to be an NFL tight end. And right now he's kind of treading water. And it was good for him to get involved and have a big play. Maybe that'll kind of light a fire under him a little.
Yeah, spark play. You know, I wonder, because I agree. I think that he's shown some talent. I wonder, though, I mean, is there any chance that they could keep five at that position?
Yeah, that's tough. That's a lot. That's a lot of tight ends to keep on the 53. And that's why, like, going into the game last night, when Pete and I did our live stream before the game, I was talking about how eager I was to see Dominique Daphne play in the preseason and see him kind of duke it out, being the guy that was Josiah DeGuara's replacement when he was hurt. And Dominique Daphne was inactive last night, right? He was one of the four tight ends inactive, which to me says that they're familiar with Daphne. In the very short amount of time that Daphne has been on the Packers, he has been able to produce and to show that, you know, hey, I'm taking this seriously. I deserve a role. I deserve a spot on this team. And that, in my mind, is bad news for Jay Sternberger.
That I think it comes down to a numbers game. I think it's going to be really interesting. And I'm with you, Tom. I they do got a lot invested in this GM. Has a third round pick invested in Jay Sternberger. It's hard to turn your back on. Especially when I think that he has shown up at times in this camp and the talent has been there. You saw it in the preseason opener, but man, it's, you know, you keep four tight ends, you keep five tight ends, an extra at some point, it's a numbers guy. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked. I'm not saying it's likely. I'm absolutely not saying it's likely that Jay Sternberger gets cut. I'm not saying that. I'm saying I would not be shocked if it happened.
It's not unheard of to keep five. I think McCarthy did it in 2018, maybe. I'd have to go back and check. But really, it would mean keeping three running backs. And you know, you wouldn't be able to stash a Patrick Taylor. One of those guys is technically your fullback, and that would be probably Daphne. So you would have, between the two positions, you'd have eight guys. And that's kind of how I think they could justify having five tight ends.
We could talk about the offense for a really long time. I realize we haven't really touched on the receivers and their performance last night. I mean, Devin Funchess was the standout. He was targeted eight times, six receptions, 70 yards. For someone, we talk a lot about Jordan Love. He hasn't played in 2 years. Devin Funchess hasn't played in 2 years and was still able to put together a pretty solid performance. Any takeaways about Funchess, other receivers from last night's game?
I thought it was pretty blah. You know, I thought Reggie Begelton was in for a big game because he's been Jordan Love's go-to guy, but he really didn't play that much. It was clear they wanted Funchess to get a ton of snaps, and he did. The thing with him that is going to be the decision on whether he stays or goes is what he does after the catch. If they can find out whether he still has anything left to make a catch and go with it. You could see his timing's off. And, you know, I bet you on that 4th and 2 where Jordan Love went the wrong way and he threw the ball up to Funchess, you know, if he's in midseason form, he probably has a shot at coming down with that. You know, he looked awkward.
The ball was there.
Yeah. He just looked awkward going for it. And that's what they got to find is, can they find, you know, by week one or the end of camp, is he starting to look like a guy who can, you know, run a slant and keep running with the ball?
You know, I thought in general, what we talk about it going into the game, it's going to be very fascinating to see how many guys don't dress, right? How many guys don't suit up. You want to see that clear line of demarcation. Devin Funchess, you know, obviously he ended up going back to the locker room, but, you know, he was not one of the he's fighting for his job, and he's probably the top of the pile of guys that, you know, obviously other than Amari Rodgers, who's a rookie, he's making the team. As far as veteran guys, he's the top of the pile of guys who are fighting for their job. So he's right. He's squarely on the bubble. I mean, he's right there on the bubble.
He and Equanimeous St. Brown, I think, are vying for one of the spots. They're the same type of players. St. Brown's younger, probably a little bit of a better blocker, but he's got to get his butt on the field. You know, he's been hurt too much, and then he's got to make something happen. So
who's the best special teamer between those two? That's the big question, right? I mean, whoever can bring it the best on the special teams.
Well, I don't think Funchess plays special teams.
Nope. So that would be an advantage EQ.
Yeah. I don't, where does he play? I don't even know. I can't think of him really being on many covered units or anything. I don't know. That's why Malik Taylor made it last year, because he's such a good special teams player, and he was a big, strong target. So a lot of things still to be decided.
All right, let's move it on over to defense and have a discussion about their overall performance. Tough to get a very good understanding of Joe Barry and the new defensive scheme. That's just the nature of preseason, but certainly some individuals stood out, some for some good reasons, some for some not so good reasons. Let's start with the, you know, at least maybe vaguely positive in some cases. We'll start with Oren Burks. We saw Burks blitzing quite a bit, getting after some running backs, getting after the quarterback. He ended up coming down with a sack himself. For a player like Burks, who has struggled to find a role, who has been moved from inside linebacker to outside linebacker, back to inside linebacker, you know, I know we've discussed on various platforms how important these preseason games are, but how well did he capitalize on his opportunity last night?
Well, he was the one of two guys I noticed. I noticed Oren Burks, and I noticed Jack Heflin, who is my new man crush guy. He's my new sleeper dude who is going to make the team. He was all over the place, this massive human being. And watch out for him. I'm just telling you that right now.
He was so amped. He made like one tackle. He like grabbed, was like a running back's ankle and brought the guy down. And he was juiced about it, I would say.
Yeah, but I watched him after that. And the guy moves down the pile. He plays really hard. He's really big. And just keep an eye on him. That's all I'm saying.
Tom, I'm just sad to learn that I've been replaced as your man crush guy. That hurts.
I can love two people. Don't worry. There you go. That's historically been accurate. You know, the thing that just stood out to me the most was that I almost fell asleep watching that defense. It was just the worst. I mean, come on. You got to show something. Don't you got to fire your guys up a little bit and play? I mean, yeah, he blitzed a couple times, but poor Josh Jackson had to sit out there in zone and play all the, you know, out routes and come in, you know, playing zone the whole night. I don't know. He didn't get off on a good start with me. So, you know, and we all know how important that is.
So Joe Barry, not your man crush.
Right.
No, yeah. You know, or that's like, that's what Oren Burks was drafted to be, right? Like he was in coverage and he was fast and he shot the gaps and that was what he was always supposed to do. Again, I mean, we said it with Jordan Love, it's one game. So keep it, but
yeah,
you know, it's one game for Oren Burks. So let's not, you know, but that's something to build on at least. And when's the last time that Oren Burks as a linebacker has had something to build on it? It has really not happened. So, you know, he's making the team for special teams. He's one of the top core special teams guys, but that was what he was drafted in the third round out of Vanderbilt to be, was that converted safety who had the athleticism on the second level at inside linebacker that can move around the field in coverage and be disruptive in the gaps. And if he can continue that, that's the big question, obviously, but that's where I'm at. That's what he's drafted to be. It's one game. See if you can do it twice.
Yeah. The key there is that when teams start, where he's always fallen is that teams, as soon as they start motioning guys and you know, doing stuff that confuses the defense a little bit, that's when he's made his worst mistakes. He just doesn't adapt to what the other team is doing. And so that's what he has to do. That's what he has to prove. You're right. He started, it was a nice start for him. But the next step is that he's got to be aware. His football awareness needs to grow. So we'll see whether that has happened.
So Jack Heflin, Tom, is your man crush. What about defensive lineman TJ Slayton, the 6'4", 330-pound man, quite the big dude. And he got quite a bit of playing time yesterday, really being used everywhere on the defensive line. It seemed like they were lining him up at every technique Jerry Montgomery was. Did he stand out to you at all? I know, Tom, you said everyone was putting you to sleep, but what did you make of Slayton in his NFL debut?
I didn't notice him much. Ryan, did you watch him at all?
I didn't notice him much either. I think that in practice he's shown a little bit more athleticism and maybe pass rush potential than I expected from a man that size. But I did not notice him much in the game.
All right, let's move on then to some of the maybe not so noticeable for the wrong reasons. We touched on Josh Jackson. I think Pete Doherty said Jackson when Pete wrote his post-game column wrap-up insider, Jackson was targeted 6 times, gave up, you know, I don't want to get this wrong, so let me make sure I get this number correctly, right? So it was... Yeah, 6 receptions for 85 yards. Gave up plays, including a 15-yard completion to receiver Chris Conley that converted a 3rd and 13. That drive was not good for the Packers defense as a whole. They gave up 3 third down conversions. But when it comes to Jackson in particular, and we talk a lot about players who are going into their, you know, their, they've been with in the system for a long time, or at least they've been with the Packers for a long time. No one's been in Joe Barry's system for a long time, but you know, he's practically an NFL veteran at this point, and he still has a lot to prove, and these preseason games are becoming increasingly important. What does one make of Josh Jackson's situation right now?
Well, first, I'll defend him a little bit. I think one of those plays, and I don't know if P was counting it or not, but there was a deep in, I think it was down to like the 4 yard line or 5 yard line, that everybody was blaming him for. And it was a zone coverage, and Ty Summers didn't get deep where he was supposed to. And it really wasn't on Josh Jackson. The other thing is, you know, he was laying off, he was playing soft. Now, you know, Matt LaFleur said, we got to tighten that up. Well, why wasn't someone telling him to get up and play the guy, even though they're in zone? If they want him to be up there and play the guy in press, then tell him to do it. And if he's not doing it, then take him off the field. So I just wonder about that, because he just looked like he was playing soft zone and doing whatever the call was that was coming in. And if they want him to be aggressive, they need to tell him to do it.
Yeah, it's still, though, it's a bad look when you give up 15 yards on third and 13. I mean, it's just, at this stage, he's got to know better. Like,
which play was that? Remind me. I don't remember.
Oh, it was on the drive where they gave up 3 third and longs. I think a touchdown drive. It was in the first half. They gave up 3 third and longs. One of those was third and 13 for 15 yards on the right sideline.
Okay. Second, it was in the second quarter. It was the Texans' fifth possession of the game.
They gave I remember that. Yeah.
A third and seven, a third and 10, a third and 13. The third and 13 was the last third down conversion. And then there was technically there was the conversion, the third down conversion, when the Oren Burks roughing the passer and Shamar Jean Charles pass interference call that got blown off or waved off because of the dual penalties. But yeah, that was just a mess of a defensive stand.
I think it was a mess of a drive, yeah.
I think it was a classic case of Josh Jackson not trusting his speed, and the guy breaks off the route, and he's so worried about the guy going deep that he's too far off him. And I don't know if they can ever cure him of that. Because he's not fast. But you know, you can't play like you're not fast. You've gotta get on these guys. And so I think they took a really long, hard look at him. And if we go into practice this week and someone else is starting, you know, or with the number twos, then we'll know what they thought of him.
That is a great point. What happens now to Josh Jackson's reps, because he has been getting some first team reps? That is a great point.
Right. That's the big question for Brian Gutekunst. Any preseason is how much patience do you have for certain players? How many more opportunities do some of these players deserve in terms of chances to prove themselves? Josh Jackson has had a lot of those chances. And, you know, it's one preseason game, but he's had a lot of opportunities to prove himself, and we're still waiting. So we'll see how much more patience Brian Gutekunst has, how much more he wants to see from Jackson, but it's going to be tough sledding for him and for some other players that are on the bubble. Before we wrap things up for today, is there anything else we want to discuss? We didn't really get into special teams, and Lord knows the special teams units got quite the, they had a lot of opportunities yesterday.
Lord knows. Yeah.
They weren't good. I mean, but I'm never one to make too much out of special teams early on. It's usually you're looking for guys who make plays, you know, because as a unit, they're not. They're so worried about making the team somewhere else, you know, or, you know, it's just guys have not settled into what they're going to be doing. And I think they're all trying to make the team by being making some big play. So keep that in mind. By the third game, they should be better. If they're not, then you can start to worry.
Tom, you tell me if I'm being too harsh here. But my goodness, I don't care if you're a rookie. You do not field a punt at the 5-yard line. And if you do field a punt at the 5-yard line, you absolutely do not muff it into the end zone.
Right.
And why I think that matters is because Amari Rodgers is not being tested out or tried out there. He is your starting punt returner. This is something he needs to know.
Right. He is. And with Randall Cobb as the safety net, you know, where if they feel like he's not ready, then Randall Cobb's right there. But yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, you can't make that kind of
just can't happen. That can't happen. So
and then the next one, so he has a chance to make up for it, and he fair catches it with 15 yards away from him. So that's where I was wondering, okay, you made a mistake, I'll come back and let's see how you react to that. And I didn't think he reacted well to it.
No, he had a lot of room. And so, you know, it's preseason openers, two more, but that's got to get fixed because that's a big problem. I think for the most part, like, you know, when you have 30 guys that aren't dressing, a fair amount of those guys are going to be on your special teams units. So you're filling those units with bottom of the roster guys, guys that are not going to make the team. So I from a coverage standpoint, all, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but Amari Rodgers is your starting punt returner. And that is a huge, massive no-no. And like you said, Tom, he did not respond to it very well. So it's a learning moment for a rookie.
A lot more learning moments to be had in the upcoming weeks. Thank you all for listening. It's been a real treat to chat with all of you. Make sure you're checking out PackersNews.com for all of your Packers coverage. And we will chat with you very soon. For Tom, for Ryan, I'm Olivia. We'll talk to you next time.